Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak! I won't allow it!
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. I've got great news. Mortgage interest rates have dropped. So if you're thinking about buying a home, right now is the time to lock that low rate, even before you find the home of your dreams. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Yeah, say that all the time. I always say, yeah. I always say,
go.
I always say, say, jump, 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 stop.
Autobots, roll out.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I am joined with
Alex.
Welcome to the first show of 2019, officially anyway. Hope you guys had a wonderful New Year's, Christmas holidays, all that jazz. Hopefully you are back at work now and enjoying the slog that is your life eternal.
Kwanzaa, Festivus.
Something or other?
Yeah, all that. holiday from work times, whatever you want to call it.
And that's right. So we have finally decided to get ourselves back in gear for Twig. As always, we'll be coming to you Sundays or Mondays, depending on whenever we post the show. Just kind of depends on whenever we get shit done,
depends
really.
Depends on how tired the producer is when he gets home.
Yeah. Or whenever I decide to edit the show. Usually either Sunday night or Monday morning. It's never one or the other.
Very true.
So anyway, what has been going on this week? We have decided to get back into full swing production this week. We have a lot of reviews coming over the next few weeks, actually. A lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got a Turtle Treasure done. I reviewed a few things.
Yeah, basically all the stuff, or most of the stuff, I'm still waiting on a few things from the postal strike that happened 2 months ago, are finally starting to trickle in, and a bunch of stuff came in the 2 weeks where we took a hiatus from recording for the winter.
Yeah, so for myself, I'm catching up with some stuff that came in just after I took my holiday break, so next week on the show, you're going to hear some D&D stuff, a movie that I had a chance to review. However, in this show, you're going to take a look at a video game that I had a chance to review from Mega Cat Studios. That's Coffee Crisis. We're also going to take a look at R. Talstorian's Cyberpunk 2020, which is an RPG that Alex reviewed. And then we're going to look at Tales of Vesperia on the Nintendo Switch, I believe.
Yep, it's the definitive deluxe fancy edition.
So we'll be looking forward to that, to bring you on this particular episode of the show. Over this past week, I don't think if there anything really exciting has happened. Truth be told, not really. Although, I have discovered a newfound love for an actor. More specifically, this guy's stunt work. For a review I worked on for next week, I have reviewed Mission Impossible Fallout. While not giving away my review here, I have decided that Tom Cruise can save me anytime.
Save me, Zinu.
Yeah, help me. Like, just watching the stunts in that movie, I was so impressed. So I actually went back and bought the Mission Impossible franchise because I can't find my Blu-rays. So I'm like, nah, whatever. It's like $30. So went back and did that. Actually, there's something else I've been doing recently. I've been cleaning out a lot of my junk from my
drawers. Treasures.
Yeah, treasures. I've been getting rid of a lot of things. So if you've been watching my Facebook or my Twitter feed, I sold my Ninja Turtles. I've sold a lot of my video game stuff. Got some stuff leaving later on in the month. Even some stuff I didn't think that would sell. I actually got this USB drive from Rockstar. They sent me for Grand Theft Auto 5.
Oh, cool.
The Loneliest Robot. And I sold that for like $40. I was like, holy shit, someone actually wanted this. I was so surprised.
Well, you know what? I think you came to the realization that if it's in a bunch of boxes in the back room that you're never going to touch,
or can't touch in my case.
Yeah. Like, is it worth it if it's just there? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? If you're not using it and you have no plans. Or in some cases, if you forgot you have it.
Yeah, because I was looking through some of my boxes and I even came across some stuff I thought about selling. Because I have a bunch of RoboCop and the Ultra Police toys. And Blair's like, don't sell your RoboCop stuff. You're going to regret it.
No, I was going to say, yeah, you do inventory and you go, what is important to my life? And if you're like, well, I forgot I had this, it's not important, but maybe somebody else will really like it.
Yeah, like I sold my Ninja Turtles, like even my collector series Playmate stuff, and I never thought I'd get rid of them, but I can't display them. I have nowhere to display
and also,
all these figures.
What it helps is if you decide, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to improve the show by doing, you know, hardware updates or upgrades or you're like, put it towards a new thing that you really want.
Actually, I did something, I guess because she already kind of knows. I decided to take care of wife updates. And I took care of my wife's Valentine's Day gift a month early.
You got her Hitachi wand that plugs into the wall?
A Sibian, you
It'll might rattle say. Your fucking teeth.
So I got her a really cool Rugrats purse from ThinkGeek, and I got her some other stuff. She can hear me in the other room, so I can't say much more.
It's a little different than the Hitachi wand.
Yeah, a little bit different. I don't think you can get that on ThinkGeek. But anyway, guys, we've got an exciting show coming up for you this week, so thank you. As always, stay tuned. Take a visit to our sponsor, LibrusArcana.com, for all your dice and RPG needs. We'll be back right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. Today, we are taking a look at Coffee Crisis on the Nintendo Switch. Well, guys, as myself, I get a bunch of pitches in my email every single day to review games, movies, television shows, whatever. I'm inundated with emails. So I got this email from this game studio called Megacat Studios, and they wanted me to take a look at their game called Coffee Crisis. And I figured, yeah, sure, what the hell, why not? And I didn't quite know what to expect with this game. With a name like Coffee Crisis, I expected something stupid. I was wrong. Holy shit, was I wrong with this game. So Coffee Crisis, it's a brawler. Think Double Dragon, Streets of Rage, Turtles in Time, or the original TMNT from 1989, or like The Simpsons or something like that. And basically you play Nick and Ashley, two coffee baristas from the Black Forge coffee shop, who are out to stop these aliens who are coming to Earth. The Smergillians, I think that's how you pronounce it, are coming to Earth to steal our metal, our Wi-Fi, and our coffee. And they're out to do this because aliens, we don't understand it. That's what these people do. So you are fighting across a variety of different levels based upon real-world locations in Pittsburgh. And that's not even the weirdest part about this game. So I'm playing through this game, and you get these 16-bit cutscenes, which are amazing, I might add. The artwork in this game is fucking fantastic. I see Alpha Omega Sin and Metal Jesus Rocks. Couple of fairly popular YouTubers did not expect that. I actually reached out to them both on Twitter and said, what in the hell were you guys in a video game? They're like, yeah, it was pretty cool. Isn't it awesome? And yeah, Coffee Crisis is actually really, really fun. Like I said, if you enjoy the games like TMNT, Double Dragon, Streets of Rage, basically any of those 16-bit era brawlers, you're really going to dig this. I would say, in terms of brawlers on a console, this reminds me a lot of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, if you remember that game for the 360 and the PS3. Although, one thing that makes this game stand out to me is its amazing soundtrack. It's done by a band, I want to say the name is Greywalker off the top of my head, but seriously, it's really, really good. I had a lot more fun with this game than I was expecting. Now, you can pick this game up on Steam in the Switch store for about 10 bucks. Is it worth that? Yeah, I actually had a lot of fun with this game. You can beat it very similar to those games, like I said, Double Dragon, Streets of Rage, TMNT. It'll take you a little while. Like, you can beat this in one sitting. There is also local two-player co-op. I found the game is easier in co-op than it is anything else, but for 10 bucks, if you're dropping a bill on this, who gives a shit? You're going to have a fantastic time with it. The soundtrack will stick with you. And if you really want, if you go to their website, which I'm pretty sure, you can find them also on Twitter as well. You can buy this game for the Sega Genesis too, which that's just pretty friggin' amazing. So, Coffee Crisis from Megacast Studios absolutely gets a recommendation from us here at This Week in Geek. Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
Welcome back to This Week in Geek. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Mike the Birdman Dog, joined with Alex, the producer. And as always, this is the first news roundup of 2019. And we're going to start things off on kind of a heavy note, though I wonder if it's a really good note for one particular company in this deal. And that was that this week, developer Bungie and publisher Activision are parting ways, where evidently in the divorce, Bungie gets the full publishing rights to its Destiny baby.
Good.
Now, this was a 10-year partnership that only lasted 8 years.
There's got to be something that I have a feeling that it'll come out eventually that Activision was in breach of contract.
Well, there's something that I read, I think it was on Gamma Sutra or somewhere else, where they were saying that there may be fraud charges as part of the split. It's just supposedly a routine investigation, but as a public disclosure, they have to say it. Now, when Bungie employees were informed about this, allegedly they were popping champagne and they were so jubilant that they were free of the Activision yoke, which a lot of people were saying having Activision at your back is great because they can help you publish the game. That means doing the marketing for it, putting physical copies in stores. But with direct-to-consumer marketing, digital publishing being a thing now, you don't need to have copies in GameStop to be successful.
Well, the two things I can say out of this is, I think they saw what Rockstar did, because remember,
Rockstar was 2K.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
No, Red Dead was self-published.
Well, no, I'm talking before.
This is like they're looking at the success of Red Dead and going, hey, an indie studio can actually get so big they can self-publish at a large scale. I wouldn't be surprised if Rockstar publishes their games for them, if it becomes sort of a coalition of the large independents.
Mm-hmm.
But that's beside the point. I went down the rabbit hole and on Reddit and other sources, sort of trying to see where this split would come from. If they're are they in breach of contract? Why are they splitting up after not the full contract length has transpired? And what people are saying, there's been some people coming forward saying that Activision may have been in breach of their contract by dictating when DLC has to come out.
Yeah, because one of the problems is doing games as a service. Destiny 1 could still be rolling right now with all the improvements, but Activision wanted a new Destiny almost every year, like Call of Duty sort of thing.
And the interesting thing is, the way their contract was stated, they weren't supposed to be able to dictate schedules.
Yeah.
But then it looks like they were trying to put a stranglehold on them. It's like, well, you've got to release it now or we just won't.
Yeah, because there was, considering how much crap they put out, like there was the Iron Banner, the Taken King, Destiny 2, which is I think the Forsaken.
Forsaken was the one, and then I think there's another one, isn't there?
The Iron Armory or something? I don't know. But Destiny 2 was nowhere near as good as Destiny 1.
I'm more willing to bet that Activision did something, maybe not illegal in the government's eyes, but in breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
Because the talk is that this, they're saying it's amicable and all that, because they want to save face and make it look good for shareholders for both companies.
Activision shares dropped by 7%.
Well, what I was reading was that it was a shock to them that basically they were served legal papers. This wasn't we have a conference call and we're talking about it, or hey, we had a shareholder meeting. No, it's more like
we're leaving.
The secretary received papers that were served to them. They looked at it, and apparently they called a shareholder meeting almost right away. Which when you do that, that's because you were blindsided.
Yeah. Like, supposedly, this is not good for Activision, because they don't have a lot of wholly owned IPs anymore. All they have is Call of Duty, and I guess they have some other IP.
Spyro,
but who gives a shit, really?
And they've got WoW.
Yeah, but that's even the Blizzard problem.
Well, I was going to say,
because of the mobile game.
Like, well, here's the scary thing. It depends on how the company is structured, but basically, Blizzard is keeping that company alive, because Call of Duty doesn't make as much money as you'd think comparatively to the size of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I was Activision, I would be scared that Blizzard is going to find a way to buy out their stocks.
I remember reading something about something along those lines, how Blizzard will likely be the next company to find its way out.
That's what can happen. People don't realize, what you have is you have a coalition of people, and it's not insider trading, you have like one or two people that are powerful there, that buy up enough stock to control the company and split off.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, Activision's fucked. Because the cash cow, like, it was Blizzard's WoW and Hearthstone, all it just
and
prints the
Overwatch,
money.
Overwatch, yeah.
It prints the money. And it most companies would take that money and then invest in smaller projects. They're not doing that, though. They only invest in big projects. So they have so much money stretched so thin, but they rely on that cash cow, and they relied on Destiny the same way. They can't lose another revenue stream like that.
Yeah, I mean, COD is big, but it's nowhere near as big as it used to be. I mean, and its profile is nowhere near as big as it used to be. And sure, there's the COD World League, but I know maybe myself and three other people who watch that.
Well,
so,
like they've jumped on the bandwagon of the whole Battle Royale mode. It's all tacked on. People know it's tacked on. And they would need to create a couple new IPs that really catch people.
Well, I know this year Activision is publishing that new Samurai game, that Psycho or Seek. Well,
yeah, but but that's not going to sell the numbers they need.
No, absolutely not.
Like, they're going to sell, my guess, between 2 and 5 million copies max. And what they need is they need games like Call of Duty that would sell 15 or 20 million.
Yeah, they need big, big day numbers. And I'm trying to think, is it Activision publishing the one for the Switch, the new X-Men Ultimate Alliance or whatever? The Marvel
game?
Oh,
no, no, that's Nintendo themselves.
Oh, Nintendo's publishing that.
Yeah,
okay.
It's Nintendo is publishing it.
And Team Ninja developing.
Yes. And that is a first-party title.
Because Activision used to hold all the Marvel licenses, but now those have all been thrown up in the air.
Because
Insomniac has Spider-Man.
Insomniac always would have had Spider-Man because they're a Sony-owned studio.
But Activision published Spider-Man 2 back in the day and did the Amazing
Spider-Man. But like it's
new stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, Sony would always obviously get one of their second or first-party developers to make that for them.
Yeah.
Because remember, Sony has, as long as they keep making movies, they continuously have that IP.
I mean, one IP that Activision has, unfortunately, the last time they brought it out, it fucking bombed, was Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 was a dumpster
question
fire.
Question, does anybody actually want to play that kind of game anymore?
I think if they made a new skate game, because like there was a demo shown for a skateboarding game last E3 or the E3 before this, and it got a lot of people talking, but then it just disappeared.
I
would play a skate or a Tony Hawk. If you told me Tony Hawk Pro Skater 6 was coming and it was like the originals,
but is anybody, in this day and age, is anybody going to spend $80 on it?
$80? No. $40? Maybe.
But would they do it if they thought they could only make $40 per game?
I don't know. And that's another thing, too. Like, there's so many IPs that they could take advantage of. Like, if they made another Transformers game, like War for Cybertron. Actually, I don't know who published Devastation. I think that was Activision. I'm not 100% sure.
Who actually published it?
Yeah.
It's possible. I mean, I could look it up, but I know that that was the same team that did... it's Platinum that made that.
Yeah.
So it would all depend on who Platinum was teamed with at the time.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure, because it's not like they have, like, Capcom, where they have Mega Man, Street Fighter, Resident Evil, Onimusha. I don't know what are the big properties for Activision anymore, outside of COD.
Well, there's...
Now, COD could do something amazing, and if they released a Modern Warfare 2 remastered and included a bunch of crap... Like, there's talk about what they want to do for this year's COD.
Yeah.
And there's rumors it might be Modern Warfare 2 remastered, and they'll have Blackout mode again, which is this year's Battle Royale, which is fantastic. But I don't know whether that's enough. Now, Modern Warfare 2 was really good, but people missed the single-player campaign from this year.
Well, yeah.
And they took a risk, and it paid off. Well,
here's the thing. I don't like it when you're pulling away an entire mode of a game. Yes, it might have been considered second fiddle to the multiplayer for years, but you're still charging the same price and giving me less.
Yeah, and now microtransactions have eked into the game. Yeah. Well, get this. If you want a reticle for your scope, for a dot, they were charging $1. And I can't defend that.
Okay, Activision did publish Transformers Devastation, but here's the thing. Platinum Games, for the most part now, is doing Nintendo stuff.
Okay.
So it would all depend. Like, they don't really have a lot of IPs that... Like, they have Spyro...
Whoopie-doo.
They have
Crash
and Crash Team Racing will sell, but these aren't like they're talking millions upon millions.
They're
upon
not
millions
system
of
sellers.
No.
So moving on to other news this week. This one is kind of a sad story, but a happy ending in a sense. So a terminally ill fan is getting an early Avengers 4 screening after a Reddit campaign. So this guy named Alex Q posted in the Marvel Studios subreddit in an attempt to say, "Hey guys, I have this really rare disease called Fanconi anemia, and he's currently battling liver cancer, mouth cancer, and bone marrow failure. And he doesn't think he'll live
failure.
Yeah, he doesn't think he'll live long enough to see this when it comes out.
Probably
in
not.
April." So evidently, there was a Reddit campaign and a social media campaign called Avengers for Alexander, and it was super successful. So Marvel Studios contacted him and said, "Hey, let's work something out. Let's make this happen for you." And they're currently in the process of making that happen for him.
That's good. The dark, sinister side of me is thinking that they handed him a contract that says you have to take this to the grave.
Pretty much. Well, yeah.
Like, no, but like, how are they going to word? I mean, obviously, like, it would be one of those cases where they take all cameras and phones and everything out of the room, and then they'll probably screen it for him either in private with nothing in the room, or they'll have somebody sit with him and watch.
Yeah, oh, for sure. He'll have studio.
If they're smart, you want good PR, you have one or two of the stars come sit with him and watch
that
it with him.
That would be cool.
Because, I mean, pretty much everybody on these films are
super nice.
Super nice, and they do volunteer a lot for, like, Make-A-Wish for Kids and all that. So, but where does it say he lives?
Let me double check the story here.
If it said, like, if he's anywhere in the California area, I'm pretty sure, or within the area, it's perfect PR to have, like, if they can fit it in their schedule, have, like, a Robert Downey Jr. or one of the other stars show up and just...
Can't find it, no, unfortunately.
You know, have somebody spend an hour with him, as long as it's not, like, Scarlett Johansson, because she's boring. She's pretty, but she's boring.
I would like, if I had to sit and watch an Avengers movie, I would pick Chris Pratt, and I would pick probably Mark Ruffalo, because I think those two would just have the most witty banter.
You think so?
I really, because Ruffalo is known to blow a lot of interview things, so he'd probably give you a lot of really neat behind-the-scenes things, and Chris Pratt's just funny.
Yeah, like, I could see that. Downey Jr. would be fun if he was still in his cocaine phase, but he's not. but no, it's on a serious note, like, who would I would love to see have Sam Jackson come out and watch it, but
that'd be cool.
Just be like, yeah, so this part, this motherfucker does this. but if they were smart, they'll have somebody from the cast or have them all record him a message that plays before the movie starts.
That would be really sweet.
Because it costs them nothing to pick up a cell phone and send him a message and then have him watch
it. In related yet unrelated news, they want the Avengers to host the Oscars. That kind of makes me want to give a shit to watch it.
Oh, it's all the bullshit because they took Kevin Hart out because he said something on Twitter 8 years ago or something.
And then apologized for it.
Yeah. You know what the mistake was? Apologizing. Just if you ignore it, move on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Or you come out and say, I'm a stand-up comedian. You're supposed to be offended. Fuck off.
Well, in every interview Kevin Hart has given, because he's doing this movie, I think it's called The Upswing with Bryan Cranston, which that's a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah.
He's basically doing the apology tour because every interviewer brings it up.
And you know what? Grow the fuck up.
Once you've done Good Morning America and said your piece on it, that's all that needs to
when
be said.
When Rob Schneider defends you and gives a very eloquent reason for it, on TV, I think it was yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
Basically talking about freedom of speech. Because freedom of speech isn't just I can say things that are hateful. It's I should be allowed to say anything I want. Because if you start censoring my words, you censor thought. And if you censor thought,
it's 1984.
What's the point of America?
Yeah.
So what's happening is you have people on the extremes of both sides in different parts of the country, but it's a small but loud voice that is complaining about these things. But you know what? Grow up. If you don't like it, you don't have to listen. You don't have to watch the Oscars. Very few people do now.
Yeah. I know maybe three people who do Oscar watching parties, and that's it.
Here's the thing. Actions are louder than words. What has Kevin Hart done that's evil, that's bad, that we could agree with? Nothing. He made some bad jokes. And you know what? They probably were funny to a significant amount of people, because if it wasn't, it would have been a huge deal when it happened. Because people's tastes don't change that dramatically that fast.
Yeah.
Things shift over 10, 20, 30, 40 years. It's not suddenly a couple of years ago you said something and now it's like, oh, you got to find everything that could be bad and we're going to have clickbait websites and we're going to have social justice outrage because, oh, I'm a professional victim/offendee.
Yeah, things are
grow up
evolving entirely too quickly.
You're allowed to be crass. You're allowed to say things in bad taste. You're a stand-up comedian. You're not there. If everything was all, fluffy dogs and rainbows, life would be boring.
So, it's true.
So just say the things that go there. The problem is people make the mistake of apologizing. Once you apologize, you go down a hole of nothing. There's no road to redemption. You're just damned till you die.
Yeah, truthfully, yeah. I can't think of any contemporary examples where the apology has stuck.
It doesn't.
And people are satisfied.
The only way it works is if you apologize. You know, I said something, I was boneheaded, and you move on. And if they keep bringing it up, you just don't even acknowledge them. That's really the only way to do it. But do I think the Avengers should host? Nobody's going to watch.
I'd watch it if it was the Muppets.
Here's the problem. Most award shows are boring and they have hokey, bad lines written for them. You know what I want to see? I would rather see like Dave Chappelle and some other comedians host the Oscars.
Do it like a roast?
No, not even a roast. Just have no script. Come out, say what you want to say, introduce your thing, make up a joke on the spot, and if it's bad, it's bad. If it's great, it's great. And that's it. And you know what? You can drop an F-bomb here or there. You know why? Kids don't watch award shows.
I think the problem is with most award shows is that they're way too long. Like 3.5 hours for a technical achievement, which is cool for the technical people who are doing it.
You know what? They're pats on the back so they can sell things. That's all these award shows are.
I mean, I think people should be acknowledged for best documentary, best picture, actor, whatever.
But do you notice that the most interesting awards are the ones that never even show?
Or they're the ones that are given out right at the end of the night. So you have to endure 3 hours.
It'll be like somebody won an award for doing amazing stop motion animation where they did like 90 minutes of stop motion animation.
And it's given off stage. Or the day before.
Or they're like, and it was given out yesterday at a different gala that wasn't filmed.
Yeah, that's always bullshit. Yeah. That I'm not a big fan of.
No, and then what do? They give a pretentious Hollywood actor 10 minutes to talk, and they always give some sort of sappy speech. And you know what? I'll tell you right now, and I'm a very liberal person, nobody cares what you think. You're an actor. For the most part, you're not that intelligent. You may have good meaning and good intentions, but you're not smart enough to make the statements that you're making.
I think that's...
Everything they say is to get a pat on the back for look how righteous we are. That's the problem I have. Or they give, or the ceremonies, the awards are given to people that are friends of Hollywood. I'm saying, quotes.
Yeah, that's another big problem I have.
It's like, oh, why did Shakespeare in Love win over Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah, when it should have been Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, Shakespeare in Love.
It was all right.
It got poor reviews. It wasn't even a good movie, but yeah, it was this. We liked it better. We liked this. Like it's all bullshit.
The Hollywood conspiracy.
Basically, it's all bullshit. I feel like they're drumming up controversy to get people to watch the Oscars because nobody really watches it. Because you know what? You can catch the highlights the next day
on E! News for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and they'll go, here's who won. Here's the list, and here's the most important speeches. People don't want to digest a four-hour show. They want a half hour.
If you told me the Oscars could be 2 hours, hosted by the Avengers and Muppets, I'm there.
And all the Avengers and Muppets sing together? Yeah.
Oh my God, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
Just
give us...
Avengers Muppets?
No, not even the Muppets. I want Super Grover to be there with Gonzo and have him be an Avenger. Have them be Avengers.
I want the guy who showed up at the Game Awards this year, the Shrimp Muppet. Pepe.
Oh, Pepe. I thought you were going to say the furry Ninja? The furry weirdo.
Oh.
And that's my opinion. That
I can't
was a
think
weirdo.
Of his name. Sonny
that was,
Fox.
That was a weirdo. Let your freak flag fly. But
He is awesome on Twitter. He's like, yep, I'm gay. Fuck y'all.
Well, no. Here's the thing. I have no problem with that. But I'm also allowed to say I think you're a weirdo. You're a fun weirdo, but you're a weirdo.
I'll definitely agree there. He's a fun weirdo. So moving on to our next story. You have a couple of Star Trek stories for us.
I do. The Chris Pine Star Trek 4 is canceled. Yay! Because I still haven't seen the third one because
I
watched the first 10 minutes and it was the stupidest thing I've ever seen with terrible CGI.
Is that the one where they're running through a forest?
No, that's the second one.
Okay.
It's the one where it starts out and they're talking in a cave to some giants and then it turns out the giants are like the size of pygmy shrews and they're running after them and it's like, it's the stupidest thing. It was bad CG for how expensive it was. I can't stand the lens flare. I can't stand that it's too action-based. Discovery has the action-based stuff, but it's still a little bit better. So I give that a pass. But this is...
And they lost Kirk. They lost Chris Pine. How do you make a Star Trek movie?
Not only that, they lost...
Hemsworth?
Yeah, because he was going to play his dad. It was going to be a time travel movie. But you know what? Boring. I found the second movie boring.
Oh, the second movie sucked.
Oh, how they lied to the public. It's not Khan.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No, they RoboCop's
no,
the bad guy.
They lied. And then the flipping it around where it's like Kirk. It's so hacky. Kurtzman and Ortsy are terrible writers, terrible producers. J.J. Abrams is so overrated. All he does is remake old films. That's all he does. He remakes old films and adds lens flare and desaturates the color.
I will say, in defense of Kurtzman and Ortsman, I did like Transformers 1 and 3.
Oh, they're terrible writers, though.
And the first movie's okay. But I'm a Transformers apologist.
It's terrible. Like, Bumblebee is so much better.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm glad it's gone. If it's dead, it's dead. Reboot it or continue on with the series somewhere. Give me a Janeway movie. Like, come on, or do something.
I'd love to see that.
So, moving on from that, and that's because they lost the two main actors, basically.
Exactly.
They lost them. And, I mean, and they're not going to have old Spock, because old Spock's dead. They're not going to have...
And Zachary Quinto is probably not interested anymore.
I mean, they technically could put Shatner in there somehow. Find a way to put him in before he dies. But moving into a better story is the Picard show that was announced this past summer as being the next Star Trek show that CBS All Access is making, has had some plot details revealed. It is set in the Prime Universe.
And it happens after the destruction of Romulus?
It's 20 years after the destruction of Romulus.
So technically it ties into the Abrams movie, technically.
Yes and no. What happens is, it's set 20 years after Nemesis.
Okay, that's it, yeah.
So it's 20 years after Nemesis. The Abrams first movie took place 8 years after that.
Okay.
In the timeline. And what happened was where Spock goes back in time or gets caught back in time after Romulus blows up because he wasn't able to save it from the black hole and Nero, blah, 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 blah. Well, what happens is this goes, okay, this takes place now 12 years after that, but it's in the Prime Universe. So, like, Spock is gone, Nero and all that's gone, Romulus is gone, but everybody else in that universe is still there. So Picard is still there. He's retired-ish. They haven't said it too much about his details, but he'd have to be retired. He'd be in his 60s now.
Yeah, 60s he's or 70s. Probably like...
He'd be in his 70s now.
Yeah, he'd probably be like the retired... I think he's supposed to be the retired ambassador to Vulcan or something.
No, he was the ambassador to Romulus.
Oh.
So it's going to deal with the fallout of what happened there. So it's... The big deal is that it is a Prime Universe show. They found a way to sort of tie it in a little bit, but... It's what fans have been asking for. It's what they wanted Discovery to be, was a continuation. They haven't gone anywhere into the future since 2002. So this will be the first time we continue the lore. Now, it's Orte and Kurtzman, I guess, working on it, but if they're smart, they're going to have previous writers for Star Trek come in and write stuff for it.
They would absolutely have to.
I would hope the Okudas come back and do something.
Oh, my God. Those people absolutely got to come back. Because some of the work they did on TNG was absolutely
At least as consultants to make sure that the... Like, I would wish that they would write the Bible for it and just go, here's the continuity to go with. It's going to be the show for the hardcore fans. It's going to be the show that if you didn't like Discovery or if you don't like where it went or if you're wishing that you had more traditional Trek, it's where it is. It's probably going to be more... modern. It's probably going to have more emotion, a little more action, but it might be more of that character piece because it's about somebody who's retired and he's probably struggling with his place in the universe. Apparently, they were just saying that he is a changed, troubled man, is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not revealing too much, but it's going to premiere later this year, and I get the feeling it's probably got the same deal that Discovery has, where space in Canada is the terrestrial channel that shows it.
Oh, absolutely.
Where the rest of the world was Netflix that didn't have CBS All Access. Although, isn't CBS All Access available here now?
Yes, it is.
It is, but it would... So it depends, because I know Discovery Season 2 is still on space, meaning space airs it at like 8 p.m. and then 9 p.m. it goes on to CBS.
Mm-hmm.
And most people in Canada would prefer to watch it on space because it's in surround sound, whereas... CBS All Access, just like Hulu, is bullshit and still only in stereo.
Huh, I was unaware of
this. Yeah, it's absolute. It's, people have complained. And also, CBS All Access and Hulu are only 720p. Yeah, that's how far behind they are.
Wow.
But that being said, I think they're going to premiere every other show that they want to premiere on CBS All Access and bulk up some of their back catalog of previous shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll probably premiere this in the fall. And be the last show that they premiere for the year so that they can get people that haven't subscribed to get the
try one, and get those Christmas numbers, right?
Get the 1 month trial where they either offer it for free or offer it for like a dollar or something. You'll get your 4 weeks worth of episodes and hopefully go, oh my God, there's 10 or 12 other shows I want to watch on here. I have a feeling that they think, because they're not as bright as you might think when it comes to predicting the ratings on this, they're probably thinking, okay, maybe we can double our subscriber count from what we have. They have about 2 to 2.5 million now, including whatever's comped with their cable company. I would not be surprised if they get 2 or 3 million or 4 million more subscribers just to see what Picard is like.
I kind of wonder with Picard how much they're going to lean on nostalgia. Will they bring in people like Frakes? Will they bring
in... I fucking guarantee you they'll have cameos. It's going to be focused on him mostly, but like... The only way the show will fail is if it doesn't take place at all in space and it's just literally him in a cottage talking the whole time.
Just playing that flute from that Something of Light episode.
It has to have substance. It doesn't have to be crazy action-packed, but it does have to have...
It has to feel like Trek.
It has to have a journey. It has to have exploration. It has to have provocative thought.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is how we get our intellectual Trek, it might only be 10 episodes or something. Whatever it is...
It's still Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, get as much as we can. They could probably find a way to shoehorn Shatner into an episode or two because the timeline could be all fucked. It's prime timeline, but it depends on how you subscribe to it. Did the new timeline splinter off, or did they actually alter the past?
Or they could play the Nexus card again if they really, really wanted to.
Yeah, well, because literally all they have to do is like... Shatner honestly doesn't look that much older than he did back then.
You know who I'd like to see make an appearance? I hope they bring back Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan.
Well, she's basically ageless. in there. Q has to show up.
Oh my
John Delancey has to show up as Q. He just does. Brent Spiner's getting older and he might not show up. He could do Data's voice.
Riker would show up.
Yeah.
He still looks pretty good.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. They could have him.
Marina Sirtis.
Wheaton. Yeah, Will Wheaton should show up at some point. Like there's gotta be something where maybe he's finally not annoying and finally a captain or something.
Yeah, a captain or like a commander or something. Yeah, like show progress.
Give me a Geordi LaForge.
Yeah, because he's captain of the Challenger or something like that.
And I mean, and because this is far in the future, give me an Admiral Janeway.
Yeah, I would love to see Admiral
Janeway. Give me a Ben Sisko doing something or whatever. Or have him converse.
Use this to wrap up Prime Series loose threads.
Like literally have him go into a holodeck, like ask for advice. He goes into a holodeck and talks to Archer.
Have
Quantum Leap dude show up as you know as Archer in the holodeck, giving him advice from his timeline or something.
Or maybe there's a crossover or something. Something. Like, there's so many possibilities.
Keep the Prime timeline fun, interesting. Give me a Tribbles episode, you know. and then
stay away from the Borg
because then I can have. And it's got to focus on whatever Romulans are left. I think it's probably going to be something like him banding together the Romulans and trying to... Because now that Spock's gone, is he the only one that's going to be there to help try to unify...
Reunification.
Reunification of... Because, Vulcan had a lot of deaths happen on it. Romulus, not everybody would be on the planet. There'd be a lot of people that escaped. They're gonna be a migrant. It's probably gonna have a migrant fleet.
Yeah, kind of like Mass Effect.
Basically,
yeah,
he's gonna have to like the Romulans are gonna be gypsies. I have a feeling that's what's gonna be, and he's gonna have to sort of mediate.
And for all them,
and it's like, how does he mediate when he's not one of them?
I bet you the series finale will be new Romulus.
New Romulus. You know what? Introduce new aliens that we haven't seen. Like, we've got the Alpha Quadrant, which is what they're from.
The Beta Quadrant's where they're from.
Are they from the Beta Quadrant?
I think so, yeah.
No, they're all Alpha Quadrant.
I thought they were right on the edge of Beta, I think in Klingon.
And then the Delta Quadrant we've seen. Have we seen the Gamma Quadrant?
Not a whole hell. We've seen some species.
Is that where the Zindi was from?
That's where the Jem'Hadar was from.
Jem'Hadar. Give us something from there that we haven't seen. Give us something.
Or hell, pull a Mass Effect and pull something out of the Andromeda Galaxy.
You know, even honestly, have them encounter like not a Stargate, but something. Have them encounter like a mass wormhole. Relay. Have like not just a wormhole. Have them encounter technology that is so alien and foreign to us. It's just sitting in a dead star or something.
That's a really cool idea.
Give us something cool and different. Give us something cool, different, but with the same awe wonder and the same pace of the next gen timeline.
Yeah, like I want this to be successful.
And please, no lens flares.
Yeah.
Give us a nice, clean image. And if you're going to do space battles, we don't want shaky cam or fast thing. We want it to feel like we're watching two pirate ships fighting each other like it used to be.
Yeah, like basically old school naval
battles.
Combat.
Yeah. And the last time we got that was in Nemesis, when he crashes the ship.
Yeah, it's true. And it was very much like you said, pirate ships beating the crap out of each other.
So, you know, one crappy, for some people, one bad story of a cancellation, but one story that is actually starting to pick up steam.
Yeah, so
I'm happy
honestly not too upset to see the J.J. Abrams verse go away. I've never really got a boner for that universe. I thought it was
I hated it. It's fun to watch, but I hated it. They're worse. I was really mad at Discovery when it first came out. I can tolerate Discovery. I was upset that it was the mainline Trek show.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that Picard is going to be the more mainline Trek show.
Yeah, because I don't know. I've got reservations about season 2 of Discovery. We'll have to wait and see. I don't like the idea how Spock is at the center of it and
emotion. We'll
see what happens.
They did a good thing by casting Anson Mount as I think he's Christopher Pike in it.
Yeah,
he was the main character from Hell on Wheels, the railroad show from like the
HBO or whatever.
It was on AMC, I think, mm-hmm. or FX. It was a really good show, and he's a good actor. So
we'll have to wait and see.
There's good casting involved.
Well, that's what we have up for the news this week. So we're going to take a brief break here on the show, and before we hit our weird news, we're going to take a listen to Alex's review from R. Tal Sorian, Cyberpunk 2020.
Cyberpunk 2020 is a game that came onto my radar after the CD Projekt Red announcement of Cyberpunk 2077. I had heard of the game in passing before, but I am not the most experienced tabletop gamer in our group. that would be Birdman himself, Michael Dodd. Now, when the Cyberpunk 2077 game was announced, he had said, oh, we've got to go back and play Cyberpunk 2020. So, after some back and forth with our Telsorian Games, the publisher of Cyberpunk, we were able to procure a copy of the newly put back into print Cyberpunk 2020, and we started to scour over it and realized that it's a very, very cool and interesting game. Basically, pretty much any cyberpunk-ish or futuristic style RPG slash game slash any property out there has pretty much taken things from this. This is sort of the granddaddy of that style of gameplay. And I've gone through the book, and I found that it's not really going to be the book that you're going to want to be a beginner with. Like, if this is your, you know, baby's first RPG, this isn't going to be the game for you. You can play it as baby's first RPG, but as far as running it, there's a lot of crunch involved in this. There's a lot of you know, rolling dice, doing, you know, looking up tables, doing a lot of math, but you'll get a lot out of it. The setting is fairly straightforward. It's 2020, or, you know, even the future. And there's the ability to jack into, you know, people's minds. You have cybernetic enhancements. You're able to just, if you can think of, let's say, a good example of the future that would be like this is something from like a Blade Runner. That's sort of the futurescape, the world that you're looking at. As far as the mechanics go, it's solid, but it is a little cumbersome by today's standards, and I know that in the future they're going to be updating this with a, you know, new version of the game to sort of coincide with the 2077 game property coming out, whenever that is. Who knows? Not soon enough, because I can't wait to play. Now, with this book, you get all the basic rules. It sets up the world. It has a bunch of articles and sort of histories pulled from the world that you can read and sort of get more engulfed in and sort of enshrouded in the lore. And so it's very, very enticing. And we're going to be playing a game. I'm not sure when it's going to get released, but we're going to be playing it fairly soon as an actual play and releasing it later on this over the next few weeks, maybe into the next few months, depending on our schedule of when we can have it out. But we are going to be doing a playthrough on it. And we're going to do sort of, you know, the baby's first Cyberpunk 2020, where we roll up our characters. We've got sort of ideas behind on it. Now, the big thing with this game is the life path creation, how you can basically randomize and roll everything in your life. You can roll major events that have happened to you over the span of multiple years just at random if you wanted to. You can roll everything from your hairstyle to your background to what you're wearing to... it's kind of crazy. Just, I've never seen a game that had this much in-depth randomization and just character generation that depended on the dice. Now, sure, you could probably just come up with your background, but it's actually a lot more fun to just roll everything and just figure out what you're going to be. Now, as far as roles go, there's the cop, corporate, fixer, media, netrunner, nomad, rocker boy, solo, techie, and medtech. They're fairly self-explanatory as far as the descriptions of what they do. A cop is basically a cop in the future. Your fixer is a deal maker, smuggler, organizer, and internet broker. Corporate is slick business raiders and multimillionaires, and so on and so forth. Netrunner is a cybernetic computer hacker. Your techie is the renegade mechanics, and then medtech is a street doctor. So it's fairly straightforward. That being said, that's a fair amount of different types of characters you can play as, especially for, you know, a book that doesn't have like a ton of extra classes added on additional editions of the book. You know, that's a fair amount. You end up with, oh, let me think off the top of my head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, about 10 or so different roles you can play as. And then from there, you roll the dice and figure out your background and what you're doing, where you've come from. There's recurring characters in the game's backstory and lore, like Johnny Silverhand, a famous idealistic rocker boy singer and guitarist with a silver chrome cyberlimb arm. There's backstories where it explains things that they've done. It's really, really cool. And there were other expansions that came after. But as far as the actual main game, it's pretty straightforward and... The biggest, hardest point of entry in this is going to be if you're not used to doing a lot of number crunching and a lot of rolling of the dice. So I would say if you're playing this for the first time, you're going to want to play hopefully with a game master that has played before and is confident in being able to run the rules for you. If you're not so used to all the rules or stuff, just have the ability to roll and sort of have them guide you through. So this isn't going to be the, I've never played an RPG, nobody else in my group has ever played an RPG, let's all play it together right now. This is more of the slightly after beginner, more to intermediate level game, and I can't wait to get into it and play a full-blown introductory campaign. We're going to do that a little later this year. I highly recommend you go pick it up. The best way to do this is actually from Artelsorian's main page and store, which we'll have a link in the show notes to, because you're going to find people that are trying to scalp the original copies of this for several hundred dollars, in some cases on Amazon and eBay, when it's back in print and you can just get it yourself directly from them, shipped fairly reasonable, even in Canada, it's fairly reasonable to get. So go right ahead and pick it up from Artelsorian.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Welcome back to This Week in Geek, the Twig Show, such as it is. And we're going to talk about the news that is, was, and forever shall be weird, fucked up, and just plain strange. And some of this news is a little bit old just because we had the holidays and whatnot. But I'm going to hit you with a story that I thought was pretty cool. So if you remember, a few weeks ago, New York City had a big Transformer blow up. And if you looked on social media or on the news,
Optimus,
there's this big blue glow. I'm actually going to show Alex a picture of it right now. Do you remember seeing that picture?
Good Christ.
Yeah, so basically New York, Queens, looked like the Independence Day aliens were like going to show up.
It looks like James Cameron's wet dream of all the blue light.
Yeah, it looks like the friggin' Tesseract opened up over New York City and the Avengers were coming. So evidently
they draped the sky in the blue fluid that they used to clean combs at a barbershop.
So evidently one New York City resident, his name is Spencer Pence, who lives close to Con Edison's Astoria substation where there was this explosion, says, "I ran into my parents' room and shouted, 'Get up! It's happening!' I swear to God, I thought it was aliens. It also looked like a nuke attack." So what this kid did, he was watching TV around 9 o'clock that night when the Transformer blew up. So he ran into his room and first grabbed a weapon. He then ran outside where other people were gathered to watch this blue glow in the sky. So he says, and I quote, "I grabbed a samurai sword and left it by the door, put on my boots and went outside. If it was aliens, I was going to defend my family, and I don't know what the aliens want." After 2 minutes, the light went out and word had spread that strange occurrences originated at the Con Ed location, which is where the Transformer was located.
It arced so bad that it changed the color. It must have been so hot, it changed the color of the light.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was incredible. Now, I was talking with someone on Twitter when this was happening. It's that guy who owns Team Caliber, Cost Death. And he's like, "Man, somebody better call the Avengers." And I tweeted back at him, I'm like, "Choose the form of the Destructor." And I sent a picture of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He's like, "Well, I was going to theme this around Ghostbusters, but I was afraid nobody was going to get it." I'm like, "I would. Don't worry. I got you, motherfucker." But yeah, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen, just to see that happen in real life and not be a movie. I don't want an alien invasion, because alien bad. It doesn't work out too well for the people being invaded. But it looked cool. And you can defend your family with a samurai sword.
Yeah, I mean, remember when we had that thunderstorm about, 10 years ago? 5 years ago?
And the sky turned purple?
It was, yeah, purple. It was a purple sky with lightning flashes that looked like, you remember the end of the Hulk movie, the Ang Lee one?
Yeah.
Where he has the fight in the clouds and it's all these, like, long flashes of light, but not like normal lightning bolts. It's like the whole sky was filled with, like, you know those electric balls that you touch?
Yeah.
That's what the sky looked like. An hour and a half. I took video of it. I think I still have it, but it was purple, like bright purple.
I remember when I was a kid, I was sitting in my room, and we were having a really, 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 really bad thunderstorm. And the first time in my life I'd ever seen ball lightning. And ball lightning, oof, it chained red, and I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is that?
Oh yeah, that's the hot stuff.
But just imagine seeing this over New York City, a major metropolitan area.
Well, people laugh, like oh, when you hear like the giant bolts and you hear that big boom afterwards, those are scary. But when it's a different color and a different shape, that means it's way hotter
and way weirder,
way worse and way weirder. And that's the kind of stuff, like you're walking down the street and you walk through the fog and you just die because you get zapped in the fog.
But yeah, so that's one of the weird stories that I picked up this week. This other one you got.
Yeah, I've got one here. A poacher who killed hundreds of deer was sentenced to repeatedly watch Bambi. This is from a couple weeks ago. Authorities have no idea how many deer the Berry family and their associates illegally killed in the fields and forests of southern Missouri over the past decade. But details of the poaching operation would make any animal lover's stomach churn. Basically, over 9 years, they were illegally hunting when they weren't supposed to, because there's strict laws, state by state and county by county, on how much you're allowed to hunt. Like, you're supposed to hunt certain things because you keep things in balance, basically.
Yeah, you keep control of the population.
But they were illegally doing, you know, killing them for poaching for profit and gain, that sort of thing. So what ended up happening, they were ultimately sentenced. The county judge apparently hoped a little Disney magic would show one of them the error of his ways. According to the court records obtained, David Berry Jr., and this is in quotes, is to view the Walt Disney movie Bambi, with the first viewing being on or before December 23rd of this past year, and at least one viewing each month thereafter during the defendant's incarceration. He'll be in jail for a year, so he'll have to watch it over 50 times.
You just imagine that. Oh, it's Bambi day.
I'm hoping that they tie him down and open his eyes like
clockwork.
Like, oh, no, stop. I'll be good.
Stop. I don't want to see Thumper again.
In a scene that has traumatized generations of children, Bambi's mother directs him to the patch basically when he dies. It also says that the judge said that if it was legal, they were going to look into seeing if they could get an edited cut from Disney that makes him watch the scene where it dies over and over and over again.
Oh my God, really, that's horrifying. Him.
But yes.
Where was this again?
Missouri.
Okay, you know, honestly, that doesn't surprise me.
But yes, yeah, he's sentenced to watch it over 50 times. And and apparently it says they're going to have a guard make him watch, where he has to be staring at the screen while it happens.
Can you just imagine the Law & Order episode that comes out of this?
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, but this is one of those cases where, especially in the South, where they'll do that whole, not eye for an eye, but like the punishment fits the crime sort of
thing. Yeah, like the weird justice.
This is like your dad catching you smoking and saying, guess what? You're going to smoke every cigarette right now in a row.
That's so strange.
It's that idea. Or oh, you want to get drunk? Okay, down this entire 40 and don't puke.
I've got nothing. So I've got a weird story. This one, it'll be our final weird story this week. And it just caught my eye because it's so strange. So in San Francisco, California, this week a man walked into a McDonald's.
Okay.
And then proceeded to have the place closed for 3 days. Do you know why?
Did he decide to slaughter and pluck his own chicken in there?
No, he walked in with a dead raccoon and walked around and talked to people with it.
Oh, like, hey, I'm Rocky, yeah, the Raccoon.
Yeah, he's like, look at my trash panda.
Oh, he doesn't look all there.
Yeah, so
he looks like there's some lights off upstairs.
Now, this was caught on Facebook Live, so someone's live streaming while this is happening. And I quote, this motherfucker put the raccoon on the table. Wow, this motherfucker bring a dead raccoon into McDonald's. Only in San Francisco. Only in motherfucking San Francisco. I don't know why I'm talking about this.
Oh, okay. My brother, when he was on a work trip to work at another Google campus out there in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
he went there with his fiance, and she stayed for a couple days with him. And they said that it was much scarier in San Francisco than it was in New York. And they said, in New York, you had to walk over homeless people. They said it was scarier there, just a tougher, weirder, crazier crowd. And everybody there said that, San Francisco is the Florida of California.
That somehow doesn't surprise me. Now get this.
Yeah.
It gets a little stranger. So San Francisco police officers responded at the scene and engaged with the man who was still there with the dead raccoon. The department then told Fox News on Wednesday the man who allegedly brought the critter into the McDonald's didn't meet the criteria to be taken into custody for mental health detention and was released at the scene.
Did they take the damn thing from him, though?
They did. I would presume so.
Because it's like rabies and pest control or whatever, right?
Yeah, like you'd have to contact, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a public health issue.
Yeah, so the place was closed for 3 days while health inspectors cleaned it up.
Oh, yeah.
But after that, would you ever go to that McDonald's again?
Oh, things way worse have happened there. People have probably done drugs and fucked in the bathroom. Like, that stuff happens.
Yeah, in the McDonald's from my hometown, I know there were some interesting stories of stuff that happened in the bathroom.
Like, that's not probably the worst thing that's even in the food there.
Ew. On that note, we're going to take a break here on This Week in Geek and give you something a little bit tastier. We're going to give you Alex's review of Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition for the Nintendo Switch. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry here on Twig, where we decided to go to the international aisle of your local grocery store and find something good, delicious, and, you know, usually pretty good tasting. However, this is called Satan's Pantry, not God's Kitchen. No, we're going to try something a little bit more, perhaps evil, but perhaps good. We don't know yet, because Alex likes to pick things that bring the pain, or in a language he usually doesn't speak. What do you got for us this
week,
buddy?
Well, I've bought peanuts from this brand before, Nagaraya, which I never knew the brand. I just remember them as the peanuts that have this one specific looking label. And they make ones that are hot and spicy. Those are the ones I usually buy, or ones that are sort of plain. But these ones, I don't know the adobo, A-D-O-B-O.
Isn't that the Bosch of Double Dragon?
That's a Bobo. I thought that too.
Be Adobe.
And I looked at the back. I'm like, okay, what is it? Adobo flavor. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
I don't know.
And I refuse to look it up online because I don't want to. So it's a product of the Philippines, in a crunchy nutshell. So it's like chip nuts.
Okay.
I'm trying to see, what does it say? Selected peanuts, whey flour, sugar, modified cornstarch, cayenne powder.
Oh, cayenne. Ooh, it's got some spice.
It's far down, though, after sugar and modified cornstarch.
That might just be more of a flavor to give it a little bite.
Yeah, it still doesn't explain to me what...
Where's the Adobe Photoshop?
I don't know. Apparently, wait a minute. Really apparently, weird it's there. Best before September 18th. So, that might be why it was a dollar.
Spoiled Adobe.
No, it's sealed. Still, the air hasn't gotten out. So, let's crack this shit open and see what it is. Oh, it's in one of the wrappers. It's hard to open.
Peanuts everywhere.
No. Wait a second here. Bitey, bitey. Rippy, rippy. And
specialized tools. Not his teeth.
All right. Here, I'll pour some into your hand.
Let's see here. Shift on over toward the peanuts.
Shift on over to the other side. I'm going to be playing a lot of Doors music now that weed's legal.
That'll make the same pantries a lot more interesting.
Is it coming out?
Massive.
That's what she said.
These nuts are huge.
And they're salty and warm, and they came from my pants.
Salty nuts.
I said that to somebody at work 10 years ago. That got an interesting look.
That got a trip to HR.
I said, would you like to try my nuts? They're salty, warm, and they're in my pants. And I got the craziest look where the store's general manager couldn't stop laughing.
They smell like baseball peanuts.
They smell like pretty much peanuts.
All right, I'm popping a handful in.
All right, give her hell.
Crunchy as hell.
Very crunchy.
I dropped a peanut.
It doesn't taste like anything.
Yeah, adobo must just mean super peanut, because this is
it might super be a peanut-y. It might not be that it's a type of plant. It might be...
A type
like,
of peanut?
No. Like, you know how...
There's a hint of something there.
No, you know how like we buy Cajun seasoning? Like, it might be a regional flavor.
Hmm. Does anybody taste chocolate? Because I taste chocolate. With a little bit of heat.
There's
right
no
at the
chocolate.
No.
Onion powder, garlic powder, cayenne, some sugar. There's MSG, so some people that might be sensitive to that would feel it. But from what I can tell, this might be like when you get like Cajun or jerk or something. Like it might be a seasoning blend.
Can I have another?
Go right ahead. Pour yourself some.
Yeah, because I taste something, but I don't know what it is.
The peanuts are very much not like Canadian or American peanuts, where they're the long... we're used to a specific, I guess, strain of peanuts.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like the in the States, you have the Virginia-style ones that are the long ones. Like, long, thin ones are Virginia-style. And then on, in Ontario, we're used to the ones that aren't quite as long, but they have that more traditional peanut shape.
Yeah, the... What do you think?
I can taste
what
the we think of. Now.
So, I looked it up on Wikipedia, and adobo is the immersion of raw food in a stock or sauce composed variously of paprika, oregano, salt, garlic, soy sauce, and vinegar to preserve and enhance its flavor. So, what that's telling me is basically adobo is not specifically one flavor, it is
a
seasoning.
Like Cajun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you like seasoning more?
I would. They're actually
really good.
Even if they are a month
past
their
prime.
But now that I know they're good, I can always pick them up again sometime just as a snack from our party.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a real winner here.
All right, I'll save some more for later.
Crunchy as hell, though. Man, that's loud.
Yeah, I love the crunch of
these. The nuts are very small. Like I notice a lot of Asian nuts are like that. They're I'm not talking about dicks.
Sorry.
No, I mean as far as peanuts, I'll be clear. They're very much more like the size of a pea. Like a wasabi pea, with a crunchy shell, but not like a chip nut shell that we're used to here, a harder crunch.
Yeah.
And it has, like, the seasoning is not like here where it's attached to it. It's more like a powder, like a dusting. Like
yeah.
Sorry, not even a powder. It's like it's chalky.
But not in an unpleasant way.
No.
Not at all.
So I'd say it's a hit.
Yeah.
No, I like these
a
lot.
I'm very, very happy with
it. So I might pick up that and a few other flavors, and we can mix them together one time. Mix that with some popcorn, and we'll do a commentary day or something.
My God, you know what?
That has to be on our very special day.
These would be great inside a trail mix.
Yes, or when you're super duper high on your legal Ontario weed.
That's right. So that is definitely a winner with adobo flavored nuts right here on Satan's Pantry. What's coming up next week on the show? I'm not quite sure, but we'll be sure to let you know if we
something
find something
scary.
Gross.
I'm sure it'll be nutty.
You shit. You are so shit you don't realize what you're doing.
Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition is a game that I've been hotly anticipating now for about a year or so. To give you a little backstory, when the first Tales of Vesperia came out, I didn't own an Xbox 360. My younger brother did. I was the PlayStation guy. He was the Xbox guy. I was the Nintendo guy, and he was the Sega guy. So we sort of would share systems back and forth. Now, he had just gone, he was in high school and I was in college. He had just gone to university for a special, like, sort of summer camp thing for crazy math kids, because, you know, he's a smart guy. Now he's working at Google as a programmer, so that gives you an idea. Well, I bought Tales of Vesperia on the Xbox, even though I didn't own the system because I wanted to play it, just to play it on his system. So I spent about 4 days. Basically, I was off work, and I didn't have any classes anymore at the college, and I spent 4 days holed up in his room just playing that game to completion, putting in my 40 hours or so, 45, 50 hours, and just absolutely loved it. I hadn't played a Tales game before that, and I had kept reading how it was a great game to get into it, so I don't need to get into the story in this, or you either know it, or if you're new to it, I don't want to spoil it because it's just a really good story. Now, what have they done with this remaster, this definitive edition? Well, you get all the content that was available in the international PS3 version that we didn't get, that was the updated version. You get that, you get the option to switch between English and Japanese voice cast, much better graphical upgrade as far as how the characters look. Now, I'm playing it on the Nintendo Switch. And there's also the Xbox One version that we received. And they end up looking very similar. They scale very well the way the engine works. It's obviously a little more graphically impressive on the main consoles like the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X and so on. But it plays perfectly fine on the Nintendo Switch and has very little load times. I didn't really notice any pop-in as I was playing. It's pretty straightforward and very well optimized for the Switch. It brought back a lot of nostalgic memories from me playing it, you know, 10-ish years or so ago. And It's basically exactly how I remember it, with some little tweaks here and there to the graphics to make it a little more modern. It's the Tales game that I've been waiting for quite some time. I can't wait to see what they come out with next. That being said, this price point on this is about $65 Canadian, so it's less than a full retail release, but more than a budget title. And it's at that sweet spot, considering the amount of content you get with this. And it's well worth it if you're not used to playing the Tales games. The Tales games have an action-oriented battle system. You do see your enemy on screen, you hit them, you go into a battle. You then have free range to run around in the battle and slash at the enemies, do special moves. So it's sort of a hybrid action RPG engine. Now, they also added an easy mode to this. There wasn't an easy mode when I played initially. So I died fairly early on one of the first bosses over and over again because I didn't realize that you had to really incorporate the blocking mechanic. When you play it on easy, which I'm doing now because I just wanted to experience how it went, and I found that it was a lot easier. Enemies do a lot less damage to you. It's a lot easier to play through. It's not simply just press X to win. You do have to have some strategy, but it takes the edge off of some of the more difficult parts, and it seems to be fairly well balanced. I increased the difficulty back and forth a few times and found that it was very well balanced. If you're somebody who just wants to experience the story and the atmosphere, turn it to easy. If you're somebody who's just, you know, new to this style of game, but you know how to play a lot of action games, keep it at normal. Then there's harder difficulties that can be unlocked as you go forward and do new game pluses and so on and so forth. So I would say it's a great value at that $65-ish price point, and it's going to keep you busy for about 40-ish hours or so, depending on the difficulty you play at. So it's well worth it. So that's Namco Bandai Games, Tales of Vesperia Definitive Edition.
Warm, salty nuts in and around my mouth. Tasty, so tasty, tasty.
I actually, at work years ago, had nuts in my pocket during Boxing Day, and I was so tired from doing like 10 hours of my shift that I went up to one of the coworkers, and I asked him, I said, would you like to try my nuts? And I said, and he goes, what? I said, they're warm, salty, and in my pants. He declined, and then two girls were like, I'd like some nuts. So I pulled my nuts out, and then I put my nuts in their mouths.
You're such a gentleman.
I was very tired, and we giggled like schoolgirls.
You know what? It's so weird, but I didn't know this was a thing, and it oddly enough ties in the video games. So I'm playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater or Thug Underground, I want to say, one of them.
Because you're 12 and it's 2001?
Shut up. Because I love those games. I kneel and miss them. So there's a point where you have to deliver hot, salty nuts to people on your skateboard. And I didn't know that getting nuts from a street vendor was a thing. I've always wanted to try them.
Okay, I've never had a warm... It's, okay, you get nuts. They're like the ones you get at the like
the ballpark?
Ballpark or...
Never had that either.
My local OHL arena does that. Hot dogs and nuts and stuff. And it's more of a baseball thing. Usually it's like roasted nuts there, or like when you go to like a Jays game. But what's more common around Christmas time, especially if you have small markets, is occasionally, if you got a good one in town, you know where you get the really good foot-long hot dog, the real street dog, greasy, terrible
shit?
Yeah. Occasionally, that guy or girl will have set up another barbecue, mm-hmm. and they'll be roasting chestnuts.
That's pretty cool.
And that's cool. So I have had chestnuts. I've had street nuts from chestnuts, and those are great.
I really want to try that. So I guess the next time I'm hopefully down in Toronto, maybe I can find a street vendor selling
nuts. Yeah,
they'll
down there, they'll have nuts, and they'll probably be selling, if they're any good, they'll have sorbets. That's the Jersey, New York dogs.
Yeah.
The Schneider's dogs are okay, but they're not the same as they used to be, the Canadian ones. You want the American ones if you want good, greasy dogs.
Yeah, the last time I had a really good Coney Island dog when I was in New York.
And that'll be a sorbet one, yeah.
Okay, so I know what you're talking about. So coming up on the site this week, we should have a turd or treasure. I'm percolating ideas for another botched roll. I kind of wanted to... We just recorded a session here on Cambridge Chronicles. We recorded the first two episodes because we just ran out of time this week. And I'm thinking about doing it on world buy-in, how to get your players invested in your world. And it's not a slam against Alex or Tristan, but it kind of got me thinking.
Well, it's not just world buy-in. It's
how do you do it?
Here's the most important issue in all of tabletop gaming. Scheduling.
Yeah. Oh, because there's always that meme where, like, I have Thursday free. I have Friday free. Oh, yeah. I have next Thursday on the 2nd.
Or it's like, whatever. We all have 1 hour overlap, and it's like, but we want to play for, like, 3 hours. That's the hard part.
Oh, yeah. So I kind of got a thought going here about world building and world buy-in. I kind of touched upon it briefly in my last episode of Bossed Roll, so hopefully I'll get something figured out this week. Otherwise, there'll be a turd or treasure. We'll probably get a commentary done this month at some point,
because we have a lot of stuff coming in. If we have time, you know, one or two would be cool. Just get a few done.
Shoot the shit over something.
The best part about those is, unless there's like a holiday coming up, something specific, those are things that we can record and just have fun, hang out with, chill, and then release them when we feel like it.
Yeah.
And we can have a few done, and then we could even put up like a Twitter poll. What would you like to see first?
We should do like a Star Trek one, since we both like Star Trek.
Or even better, a knockoff Star Trek one.
Yeah, all right.
Find out like Star Raiders or one of those ones where everything was copying Star Trek and Star Wars. Do something fun. I'll see what we can do. And the best ones are the ones that we can do that have fallen out of favor as far as releases go, and you can find them on like YouTube.
Or something.
Because then everybody else can follow along with us. Easy peasy, one click. Squeezy.
All right. So anyway, guys, that's what we got coming up on the site this week. We will have more Satan's Pantry's video game reviews, book reviews, and actually, before we go, something very special coming out. As you may have heard in the news, the official Elder Scrolls cookbook is coming out. Well, I've been in contact with the publisher, Insight Editions, and we will be talking about the Skyrim Elder Scrolls cookbook here on the show, and we'll be doing more taste testing like we did. So we're going to have sweet rolls and cheese wheels and all sorts of other bizarreness from the world of Tamriel. Well,
and
so, look
cool.
Out for that.
And on my end, you know, we're expanding because we've got manga and comics coming. That's sort of a thing that we're trying to expand into all things geeky. And in the next few days, I should be receiving the brand new CD soundtrack for Cobra Kai, the Karate Kid TV show.
So cool. So yeah, we got a lot of neat stuff.
I'll take a week or so to absorb the music and give my thoughts on it, because I only saw the show. I didn't really listen to the music. So it's kind of interesting now that is becoming a thing again, is soundtracks.
I'm really glad too, because soundtracks can really help push a show's narrative forward, really develop the feel for it. So anyway, guys, like I said, big thanks to everybody who participated in the show. Big thanks to Alex, for you putting together the reviews of Cyberpunk and Tales of Vesperia. Big thanks to Mega Cat Games for their copy of Coffee Crisis, which was provided to us. So until next week, we have been
Alex. Make 2019 a fun, awesome year. And if you're an asshole, fuck you.
That's right. I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying be cool, be kind, be careful, and as always, live free or die hard.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle. It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, You could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to GEICO.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.